I'm James Baker, and this is Itinerarios, Music with Latin American Roots. One of my great pleasures during the years I worked as a musician in Mexico was getting to know the individuals who make up the Cuarteto Latinoamericano. I had the further good fortune of working with the Cuarteto within the chamber orchestra Solistas de México. More about Solistas shortly, but first allow me to introduce Saúl Bichon, a violinist with the Latin American Quartet. Saúl, I wonder if you could give us a thumbnail sketch of how the Cuarteto came to be formed.
The Cuarteto started, we're celebrating our 30th anniversary. Our first concert was in 1982, so last year we had our 30th anniversary. Was formed in Mexico City. I was not, I'm the only not original founding member. They started with a violinist from Uruguay, Jorge Risi, who was living in Mexico at the time. And then in 1986, he decided to go back to his country after the dictatorship ended. And I was just finishing my studies in Israel, and my colleagues and brothers invited me to join, and I came to Mexico with my wife, and I joined the Cuarteto in 1986. And we've been based in Mexico City, and also, we, as you said before, we have also had a position at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, which actually lasted 20 years. We ended that only in 2008.
What prompted the formation of the quartet? I know you say that you weren't one of the original members, but what was the prompt that led to the formation of the quartet?
Right. Well, I think first and foremost is that the love of chamber music that we all had and have, the Bitran brothers and the violist Javier and also Jorge Risi at that time. We were all trained as orchestra musicians like most conservatories do nowadays, and we all had orchestra jobs, but we always dreamed of the possibility of making a living playing chamber music, which is something that we had done as children, and it was something magical for us. So in 82, my colleagues and Risi got together. They were all working in orchestras, and they started rehearsing at night and seeing the possibility of launching a quartet without major aspirations. But they found that they sounded good, and they started getting job offers. And most importantly, they found a trove of Latin American music for quartet that was laying there in the conservatorio without having been touched for years and years. So they took that music, they shook the dust up, and they started reading, and they found fabulous works by Latin American composers, and that spurred the idea of really devoting a lot of time to the quartet. And after a year of trying, they took the big step of leaving the orchestras in Mexico, and they started doing the quartet for full time. So it's the love of chamber music and the discovery of this repertoire that had been neglected, I think, were the main two components of the quartet at first.
Do you think the Cuarteto could have, from the very beginning, presented itself solely as a performer of Latin American music, both contemporary and otherwise, or was it necessary to come at it a little more cautiously?
It was very important what we did and what we still do of putting the Latin American music in context. It is seldom that we play an all Latin American music concert. Even our first German tours, they asked specifically to have a half of European music and the other half Latin American, and it still happens today. I think it's very wise. I think Latin American music, as all contemporary music, should be given in doses. And I believe that if a quartet cannot play a Haydn quartet, top-notch level, they shouldn't be playing Ginastera or Revueltas, because it would be a disservice to the music. We have heard so many pieces that have been destroyed by the performance, and we blame the composers, and that's not fair. So we believe very much, we play our Mozart, and we have Beethoven Festival in Bogota in March. We're working hard on Beethoven right now. We do it because we need to do it, we love it, and we do not believe in not being able to play a C major scale in unison, perfectly in tune, before approaching any 21st century composition, and do it with respect.
Congratulations on that Latin Grammy. I really enjoy that recording called Brasileiro. Tell me a little bit about that. Was this music that was somewhat new to the quartet, or how long have you been associated with it?
It was totally new. We quartet from Brazil, Quarteto São Paulo, sent us a live recording of a concert they played, in which they included Francisco Mignone's Quartet No. 2. We loved the music. We thought it was fresh, different than Villa-Lobos, in a good sense different, even though we love Villa-Lobos. This is a different way of approaching Brazilian music. And we started finding out, and I got in touch with Francisco Mignone's widow, who lives in Rio de Janeiro. And she had all the music that her husband had written for quartet. She had donated it to the National Library in Brazil, and she went to the library. She got them to scan all the music, and they sent me a disc. We started reading through it, and we just fell in love with everything, and we decided to propose it to a recording company, and so we recorded it, and that's the end of the story. But the widow is so pleased with it, and she's she's thrilled that we recorded this music, and so are we.
We just heard the String Quartet No. 2 by the Brazilian composer Francisco Mignone, this from the compact disc titled Brasileiro. The disc won a Latin Grammy in the category of Best Classical Recording at the recent Latin Grammys. Congratulations, of course, in order to the Quarteto Latinoamericano for that accomplishment. I'm James Baker, and this is Itinerarios, Music with Latin American Roots on Your Classical Oasis, KPAC San Antonio, and KTXI Ingram. I'm speaking today to Saul Bitran, violinist with the Latin American Quartet. Saul, when did the Quarteto begin to emerge as an international player?
There were some European tours before I joined, because Jorge Risi had studied in Germany. He had some contacts, so they went to a competition in Hanover. They had some tours in Germany. They went to a few places in the States. They played in Miami, in Chicago, Milwaukee. So there were a few international tours. I would say, however, that the real push for international career was after I joined. The U.S. presence was magnified by our position at Carnegie Mellon, which was a big stepping stone for us. And also the help of Eduardo Mata was instrumental in us getting an international career, because he, as you know, he had contacts all over the world, and he always recommended us. We played a very important concert at the South Bank Center in London through his invitation, and he was a big push for us that subsists even today.
Let's talk a little bit about Eduardo Mata. I know a lot of people have been reflecting on what might have been. We always reflect on what might have been had he not died in that tragic plane crash. He was really important, as you mentioned, for your success, and important for the emergence of some really quality music making from Mexico as well, don't you think?
Yes, he was convinced that Mexico is a major musical powerhouse. The thing that frustrated him, and it does frustrate me too, is the quality of music education. He felt that the mediocre music education was actually thwarting a nation that potentially should be all over the map musically, because there are here and there examples of musicians that have really, really made major careers. And you go to Mexico, and music is everywhere, and you see this amazing talent. And Eduardo was from Oaxaca, and in Oaxaca they have this tradition of brass bands, little towns with no formal education, people who play brass instruments in an incredible virtuosistic manner. So he was always striving to improve education. He tried to involve himself in a couple of projects. One of them was in Morelia, but as you remember, his temper wasn't always, he was a bit short-tempered sometimes. He couldn't deal with bureaucracy and mediocrity. So he usually gave up all these projects. He had this dream of really having Mexico change and get a really important music school, international level conservatory. But nevertheless, whenever he saw talent and he saw musicians in Mexico that were serious, he tried to support them actively. And he did that with us. And from the moment we met him, he not only encouraged us by listening to us and talking to us, but he got us major engagements and contracts.
Now, was the Cuarteto Latinoamericano originally the core of the ensemble that we know as Solistas de México?
That's right. So in 1984, Mata approached the Cuarteto and asked us to recommend a few musicians and to form a small chamber group, mainly as an idea to start exploring the new, by then relatively new, ways of performing Baroque music, which now have become mainstream pretty much. We had no experience, he had no experience in doing Bach in this manner, but we all decided to start to try things together, and he encouraged us to buy Baroque bowls and to use gut strings at first, which was a disaster. We couldn't handle them very well, but it was a very lively and very exciting time when we just got together and read through the Bach Brandenburg Concerto with all this fresh approach that he brought to it. And eventually, Solistas de México evolved into a more established ensemble, which was actually the only more or less steady work that Mata had in Mexico for those years. And he, as you remember, he kept coming back once or twice a year and doing work with Solistas.